Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting, magnanimous, absolutely fabulous, and down diggity right spanking episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on freedomslips.com, Revolution Radio, the listener-supported network, supporting my listener-supported show, incidentally. So if you want to donate to either of us, you want to donate and support an entire broadcast platform for like nearly 70 hosts, or just me, you can pick. You can go to either freedomslips.com, or you can go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Bear in mind, there's also a lot of archives that don't get broadcast on this radio network. On the homepage at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, there's a little slider there. You can click on the relevant archives and go to them, including videos, presentations, and things that I do on my YouTube channel. Now, it's coming up to Christmas time, so I hope everybody's having a merry, merry holiday season, especially those in 5 foot of snow. God damn, that global warming is sneaky. Now, speaking of sneaky, doing the dirty, and absolutely going into the mouth and the maw and the dirty, dirty belly of the beast, we have a free man, straw man, legal fiction, something or other, round table. There's an awful lot of different labels and what have you for this movement. But there are many advantages, many dangers and risks and pitfalls and things of that nature. And we want to do a bit of a critical analysis for people by getting some of the best minds in the game together for a little roundtable discussion. There's been a little bit of difficulty, and two of our panelists, Rob Menard and Santos Bonacci, have had to pull out, probably for unknown reasons. I don't know. We tried to get Dan Clifford on. He's in jail. But not to say that we don't have a fabulous show and incredible guests for you today. We have, first and foremost, Bill Turner, Bootstrap Bill Turner, from New Zealand, joining us, who's made the videos The Law and You and Don't Get Caught, which you can see on my YouTube channel. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinnie. Welcome.
Okay, and next up on the line we have the maker of the Corporation Nation and the runner of realityblogger.com. That's blogger with one G, just in case you wanted to know. I always love giving him grief about it's Clint Richardson. Welcome to the show.
Why, thank you, Vinny, and piss off.
See, we're off to a good start already. And our third panelist, the man who's been down to the darkest depths that many can imagine in the Church of Satan, and then come out and come in top of the heap in the natural law game and actually being able to explain it better than anybody I've ever heard of or even imagined in the world's history, Mark Passio from whatonearthishappening.com. Mark, welcome to the program.
Vinny, thank you so much for inviting me to be here tonight.
Okay, so we have a number of different assets and facets to this. So what I wanted to do first is go round the table, first of all, and get your specific definition for what you think the term for this legal fiction argument and all of that kind of stuff is, how you would actually define your contribution to the movement. Does it work? Does it not? Is it dangerous? Is it safe? That kind of thing. Bill, can we start with you?
Yeah, sorry, Vinny. I had my microphone muted. there's a lot to be said. What happened in the early days with myself was that I thought I was invincible, and because of the information we'd been given out of America, we went out and did all sorts of silly things, like taking on the Inland Revenue and the police and all those sort of things, and come and stuck in a big way. So we had to learn that what we were doing down here was quite different to what was happening in America, although similar. And so we've been working on it ever since. Now, it is a minefield, Vinny. It is a minefield, but it's got some very, very simple rules, and if you follow those rules, then you won't get caught. Perhaps the the hardest one for people to get their head around is the difference between public and private. Now, because we are continually operating in the public, we find ourselves in trouble because we're in conflict with the system. But the moment we go into the private and ask to talk in private, then the rules change. And if you go into any government corporation now, you'll see a sign on the front counter: if you wish to speak in private, please ask. So the difference between the public and private is huge. And if I can get that message across to everyone out there in radio land, that stop operating in the public, stop accepting their contracts because their contracts are flawed, and operate in the private, you'll be okay.
And Clint, what's your summation of the movement and sort of how to go about it, risks and pitfalls?
Well, it's I enjoy the concept of a movement. I enjoy the concept of people getting together and doing things, but in reality, this is an individual thing. This is not something in group, because as he was just saying, the word public literally means, you know, community, nation, state, that sort of thing. It refers to us as common people. And if you look at the word common, it's sort of the same thing as citizen or goyim or Gentile, like the Gentile 20 nations, the G20. It's the lowest common denominator. In other words, it's the, as Webster's Dictionary defines it in 1828, it's the lowest vulgar class of humans. It's the class or the mass of illiterates. That's what the public actually means. And if you're an illiterate, if you're not learned in the law, if you're not a juror, or if you're not in a juristic society or community like that, then you need to be governed. And of course, we know that government means mind control. Mentis is mind. Govern is to control or steer a ship. And we are vessels, of course. Even the Bible refers to us as vessels, our bodies, in other words. So if you control the mind, you control the vessel. Now, the problem, the real distinction that needs to be made is the difference between what a fiction is, a fiction of law, in other words, and what reality is. Now, we use the word truth. Truth is, unfortunately, not a very good word. And if you look it up, you'll find that truth actually means the... Well, it's the representation of reality. So everybody in the truth movement has a different truth. How many truths are there about 9/11, for instance? There's planes, there's no planes. The truth is this, the truth is that. Well, the only way the truth is actually established in the fiction is for the court to make its opinion of what is truth, or for the jury to decide on what is truth. That is not reality, that is just truth. So truth can be a complete and utter lie, and that's how you know you're in the fiction. So I tell people to ask a very simple question to yourself every time you're considering any subject. Ask yourself one question. For instance, does truth exist in a fiction? Well, the answer is no, it can't. It can only be a fiction. Does a man exist in a fiction? Well, no, he does not. Man is real. Man only exists in reality. Only a person, something artificial, can exist in the fiction. And if you, one last thing, if you, well, two last things. The word straw man, which is sort of what you're calling this, comes from Straminius Homo, which is a Latin term. It means a man of straw, one of no substance, put forth or forward as a bail or surety. Unfortunately, the birth certificate is the initial matrix or initial paper that all bonded indebtedness and surety comes from. So we're basically born into bondage that way. The last thing I'll say is simply the definition of the word lie. Now, again, what is a lie in reality? Which is a misrepresentation of reality, and what is a lie in fiction in government. Turns out government is the lie. The word lie in William C. Anderson's 1889 Dictionary of Law simply means to exist. To lie is to exist. It says under lie, see a representation. Well, what are you when you're a person in the fiction? You're representing yourself, your physical body and soul, as something that you could call a corporation, soul, S-O-L-E, or something that is not you. So to lie is to exist and to subsist, to be maintainable and sustainable. A willful untruth, a falsehood, a deceit, a decoy, an estoppel, a falsehood, and a representation. So basically everything in the fiction is a lie, and that makes perfect sense when you actually think about it. What is a fiction but a lie? So that's basically your best I can do at the moment.
All right. Thanks for that. And we got Mark Passio. What's your opinions?
Well, Vinny, I mean, I would have to say that while I do consider that the Freeman on the Land rid oneself of the legal fiction / legal name movement, for lack of a better term to call it, has some very good philosophical ideas and groundwork, I would have to consider myself one who is actually more extreme in my view of reality than the people involved largely in that movement. And this is because I still consider that many of them are still lending legitimacy to the very concept of government by even giving this entity any of their time or attention whatsoever. What I would consider my take on this to be is that I fall outside of that whole quote movement, because my attitude about government is as probably about as extreme as you can get. I don't think that these individuals who are operating on coercion and violence have any right to one moment of our time, have any right to asking us to do anything, to write anything to them, to say anything to them if we don't wish it and we aren't hurting anybody else. My work has largely stressed the very, very distinct difference between the natural world and the artificial world over and over again. And my work on natural law is about as really simple as it gets when it comes down to understanding the real difference between right and wrong, and understanding how the laws of morality affect and govern the freedom of the people of any given society. So where I would count myself, if I had to be honest, I consider myself someone who has really gone beyond and outside of the whole free man on the land movement, because I think any entity that is based on coercion and violence needs to be 100% thoroughly renounced and rejected, to a point where you are essentially saying, don't be involved in my life in any way. I don't need to prove to you that I know anything. I don't need to prove to you that I understand anything that you think I should understand. I don't need to prove that I don't need to grant you one moment of my time, my energy, my attention. My life is my own. My body is my own property. My mind is my own. And anybody that tries to come in and say that I must do something, that's coercion, that's violence. Anything that says I must not do something that I am currently engaged in doing, although I'm not causing harm to another being, would also be engaged in doing coercion or violence to me. And the people of Earth are basically living under that constant state of duress, that threat of violence, that threat of coercion and violence. And I think the real answer is simply saying, I no longer believe in that fictional entity, and I'm not going to give it any of my energy whatsoever, even to a point of talking to it. I hear so many Freeman on the Land movement individuals saying, well, you have to express yourself to these people. The people that we're talking about in government are psychopaths. They're psychopathic entities. They're intellectual psychopaths that are running and controlling the minds of physical violent psychopaths. I don't need to prove anything to anyone like that. I don't need to explain anything to anyone like that. I don't need them to think that I understand anything that they think I should understand. Psychopaths like that need to be dealt with by telling them, you have no right to anything that you are doing, and stop doing it. Otherwise, there will be physical consequences for you continuing to do it. When humanity gets to that point in understanding and understand that they have a right to put that behavior down, then humanity will start moving toward the path of freedom, not one second until. That's my take on it.
I was just letting that sink in there for a second. Can I offer my take on it? Because I think I've got about three takes on them, and they don't necessarily contradict each other. Number one, I believe that the very tenets of the legal documents and the court processes and everything are in the free man's favor. Okay, you got the documents, you got the proof, you got the maxims of law. Everything seems to support it. I also disagree that just because you've actually got the documents that it'll actually work, because you're not dealing with people who even follow their own rules when they write them down. And not to mention, they have a monopoly on force. And thirdly, the part about this is that, number one, it's a very individual thing, and I think that needs to change, because I see people who come up against this control grid who could bring it to its knees, but because they don't have adequate support in their lives, because their family get attacked, because their businesses get sabotaged, because their personal property gets confiscated, all of which done illegally, we're not talking about something that you can kind of win on your own per se in the broader sense of the word. You're talking about being able to provide an example to others to tread where others have feared to tread and pass on that knowledge. And until such time as a quote-unquote movement is actually born where there are support networks for those who go in to the line of fire in order to sustain their mental stability, to protect their assets, like if there's a bunch of people surrounding a car when a repo man's trying to take it away or something of that nature, he wouldn't be able to take it away. And that kind of physical barrier needs to exist before the full promise of this movement can be realized. I could be wrong. We'll open the floor up now. So, guys, any thoughts, anything to add? Who would like to go first?
Vinny, I'll jump in there if I may. I think you're kind of spot on with your analysis, because it ultimately comes into the realm of action. It's not about intellectual debate or trying to analyze all of the aspects of the fraud that these people who are completely psychopathic and operating as fraudsters put out there for people to try to decode. Once you realize that something is a fraud, you understand there is absolutely zero legitimacy to it, and that person absolutely is not entitled to anything from you. So if you realize you're operating with criminals, you realize you're operating with total liars, you realize you're operating with total psychopaths and complete fraudsters, the thing that ultimately has to be pulled back from, that has to be detached from, is allowing that system of immorality any legitimacy whatsoever in the human mind. And therein lies the problem. When something violent is being done to an individual by government that they had absolutely no right to do, how many people are willing to actually step in and stop that behavior from occurring? You know, this herein lies the problem. We're not never moving anything into the realm of action. You know, people will sit by and record it on their cell phone camera when somebody's actually being violently accosted in a way that if a regular individual that doesn't consider themselves some sort of a god because they're in this mythical entity called government, you know, and have rights that other people don't have. If a normal person were to do that behavior, you know, people would probably jump all over them and stop them from doing it, or at least try to get somebody else to stop them from doing it. But when some, you know, so-called God man that considers himself a part of the quote unquote government that has these rights that actually don't exist in nature does it, then we sit back and allow it legitimacy and videotape it and say, oh, we're going to somehow get you in trouble. You know, the whole thing is, even if you could do something to get a psychopathic group of entities to somehow leave you alone because of some type of wordplay that you're engaging with them in, would that be the right moral thing to do? if they're still accosting and bothering tons and tons of other people? The answer isn't trying to get other people to go along with their power, with their fraud, to get them to somehow leave them alone. The answer is, I am already a sovereign being. It doesn't make a difference what anyone thinks. I'm a sovereign being not because any individual agrees that I am, because I understand it or not. I'm a sovereign being by nature of my existence in the universe of nature. Period. The end, full stop, end of sentence, nothing after it. That's why we're sovereign. Our freedom is a birthright. It is a right of birth. If you exist in the universe, you are a free being. The problem is, so few people understand this. They're willing to lend legitimacy to this immoral system of violence all around us called government, and won't fully detach from it into the realm of action and say, we are not going to allow you to continue to perform the actions that you are performing that are based in coercion and violence that you have zero right to do.
Any response from Clint or Bill on those points?
Well, you know, the difficult part about this and part of the learning process, I believe, is to figure out words like sovereignty that are thrown around, you know, people don't seem to know what they actually mean. Now, if you're claiming to be a sovereign, he just said basically that I am a sovereign, or I am this, or I am that. The whole problem is that we're going past the concept of I am. I exist, and nothing else needs to be said. Exactly what he was saying before. Now, if you add I am sovereign on there, you've just made an affirmation, and you need to prove it. So if you just stop at I am, I exist, period, end of story. A monkey in nature doesn't need to prove his existence. He doesn't need a name. He doesn't need anything to give him the justification of living off the land and being a monkey, okay? Nor do I, nor does anybody else. However, when you throw around the sovereign thing, see, if you actually examine the concept of sovereignty, there can only be one sovereign. You can't have a bunch of sovereigns around, because if you're sovereign, that means you're ruling over others. So I don't agree with the concept of a man being sovereign. It's a, if you will, a misrepresentation of what the word actually means. Now, you here's the trick. You know, if government is sovereign, that means government is playing God, just like Marx says. So the trick is to say, hey, government, I have another God. Okay, I have this God, and of course the entire structure of law is based on the authorized version of the Bible, which is, again, authorized by the king. So you have to recognize that the Bible plays an extremely important role in all of this, and you can't go without understanding. For instance, Mark is saying you have to have action. Well, guess what? That's what proverbs are for. Proverb, pro-action. What does proverbs say? I mean, the Bible basically tells you, if you ignore religion, if you get rid of all the science fiction elements, you know, there's no whale, there's no this, there's no, it's all parables, all stories to make you understand how to stay away from government and religion. I call the Bible the anti-fiction or the anti-religion. It's literally the key to everything is in there, but you have to read it as an independent book away from all the religious doctrines. Of course, the Bible actually says don't add anything to this book. So Proverbs says some very important things all throughout the Bible. What does it say? It says do not respect straw man. It says do not respect persons, titles, flattering titles. Do not ever take upon yourself flattering titles. Do not ever become a surety, for you will smart for it. Smart actually means to be put in pain for it. So we're all sureties, as the definition of straw man or strawmanius homo in Latin says, you're an artificial person put forward, a name put forward for bondage and surety purposes. That is completely against this book, this beautiful book that gets completely put aside because it's attached to, artificially attached to these religious doctrines. Now, that being said, we go to the word freedom. Freedom is another word that gets thrown around by the patriot community, and they have no idea what it means. Okay, you take the word free, and you take the word D-O-M. Okay, to To have DOM attached to a word means that something is dominating or in the position of domination over that thing. Kingdom, that means a king has dominion over that land. Freedom, unfortunately, if you look it up in any dictionary, especially Bouvier's Law Dictionary of 1856, which is a direct examination of what the intent of the Constitution is supposed to be. That's why it was commissioned by Congress to literally be a dictionary. It's why it's probably the go-to dictionary, that in 1828 Webster's, because it tells you what the intent of the Constitution is. And of course, it says the Constitution is a debt compact. Constitutors, which is us, are debtors. Citizens are debtors. Okay, so the word freedom literally means, if you are part of the fiction, if you are a citizen of the United States, the word freedom is basically explaining a rat in a cage, a rat in a jurisdictional cage. Freedom means one and only one thing in law. It means to obey the law. No matter how tyrannical, no matter how against the natural law it is, you must obey the law. That's what freedom is. And that was one of the words when I actually understood what it meant in the legal fiction, in the realm that we all are taking place in our persons, in our straw men. Ah, now it all makes sense. As soon as I get out of line, as soon as I start questioning the system, I'm questioning my freedom. And therefore, the dominating force, and government only exists through force and nothing else. So if you're self-governing, as Marx says, you better be prepared to protect your law, your own freedom, your freedom under God or whatever you want to call it, the laws of nature, doesn't matter. You don't have to believe in some white-haired guy in the sky. The point is, if you're going to claim freedom, you better know exactly what that word is, how it's being used, as well as every other word you use, because there's, you know, the legal version of words is the opposite of the vernacular, the common vulgar vernacular, the ones we use in common parlance every day as us vulgar citizens out here, us massive illiterates. The legal language is like the mirror image or the opposite. For instance, the word live, well, can you live in a fiction? No. So what's the opposite of live? Evil. So fiction, what is fiction? It's evil. It's really that simple. And so these words like freedom and liberty, there's natural liberty and there's political liberty. When we say the Federal Reserve, for instance, is independent from the government. Well, no, it's not. It's politically it's independent, but naturally it's not. Congress created it. There's no independence. It's political. It doesn't mean what it does in the natural world. Political freedom is what we have as citizens. And that means one and only one thing, that we must obey the law. So we have to get our terms straight before we have to know the language. Because if you don't know the meaning of the words you're using in the legal parlance, in the fiction, they're going to destroy you. They're going to catch you every time. If you don't know the meaning of your words have no meaning.
Mm.
And I'll pass it on.
Well, a friend of mine was asking, you know, Vinny, how can I keep the council from coming onto my property and like surveilling it and you know, taking a chunk out of my ass if I build something they don't want? And I go, I don't know. 50 caliber machine gun nest at the driveway edge, you know, because unless you're really willing to repel any invaders physically, they're going to come on your land sooner or later.
Bill, well, think about it this way. Just one real quick. Everything that you register in your straw man name, okay, that's your Christian given name, your first name, and combined with your straw man, your surname. If you look up surname, you'll see. In the dictionaries, that means literally that you have registered your property with government. That means government owns your property and you have the right merely of use. Okay? You're a user of the person. You're a user of the name. You're a user of the property that's under the name. If you copyright something, you're copywriting it in your name, which is actually government's name. So we own nothing. Everything has been taken from us. All of our inheritable rights have been taken from us because we act as straw men instead of as ourselves. So for him to keep them off of his property, it would have to be his property, not registered to government so that government doesn't own the property. They come on the property anytime they want because it's their property. It's their money. It's not your money. You use the money and you're charged usury for it. So you have to ask the right question. Is do I, the man, own property in the fiction? No, absolutely not. Your name owns the property, and the name is the property of government.
Or as George Bush would say, is our children learning? Bill, you've been silent there for a while there. You want to jump in?
Couldn't get a word in edgeways. just a slight correction there. They don't own our property. We actually have quiet possession of the property. They own the title. And that's in scripture where it says, you want a king, I'll give you a king, but I will take a tenth of your land, I'll take a tenth of everything. So they took title, which is 10, is one tenth. Possession is 9/10, the other tenth is title. So they hold title to everything. Now, all roads, unfortunately, lead back to Rome. It was way back when the Pope issued the papal bulls to put the whole world into trust. And so we've been in trust ever since. And so understanding trust law in a state law is the key to understanding this whole thing. But last year, in July last year, when the new Pope came in, because the old Pope would not give up the reins, so the new Pope came in and said, look, the age of Aquarius is over. We now have to move into the age of Pisces. So the age of Pisces is over. We now need to move into the age of Aquarius. So what he said was from September last year, anyone working in their system no longer had immunity. That's why Bernanke and all the top chiefs around the world resigned, because they now know that they no longer have that immunity. And they're going to get done for it. Couple of other things. And the Bible is the key to it, as the previous spokesman said. Everything is contained in the Scripture. And if you go to the Scripture, you will find exactly the same in the statute. So statute is the public side of the Bible, which is the private. Okay, so understanding the way out of the system is understanding the difference between the public and the private. Now, when you're a lawyer, you go through university and get a law degree and you get an LLB. Well, the last part is right. You get a Bachelor of Law, but what about the first L? They took the C out of it because you're supposed to learn canon law and the statute law, but they don't get taught the canon law in university. And the reason they don't is because then the people would understand the system. So how I have been studying is from the Bible. I then go to the statute and then work out where it is. Now, I've finally cracked the code, Vinny, and it's...
Just before you tell us the code, I've got a joke to insert here. Speaking of statutes, you know when you walk up to somebody and he's really, really still, what do you say to him? Statue, bro? It's just so awful. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah. -3. Okay, it's all about the Trinity. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, or Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it. Now, up until last week, I hadn't put the three things into place, but we've finally found it now. The Father is the information that your mother or father put onto the registration form. Now, the interesting thing about the registration process, In the Births, Deaths and Marriages Act, you don't need to notify children who are born. You only need to notify people who are birthed. So if you go and look up birth, what it says, birth includes a stillborn. So in other words, birth is only a stillborn, so you're registering a dead thing. So they're telling you right away. However, the father, when he puts the information in, the first form that comes out is the source document. So he's putting that in, and he's acting as agent for the child, giving the child away to the state. Now, the next document, and I'm only talking about New Zealand here. I know the Americans have short form and long form birth certificates, but ours is called a printout. Now, that identifies the live-born child. So that's, so far we've got the father who gave away his only begotten son by filling in the information and registering a dead bastard. The son is identified on the printout, and then the Holy Ghost is identified with the birth certificate. Now, on our birth certificates, at the bottom of the birth certificate, it's got a warning. This document does not, I'll read it verbatim. Warning, this certificate is not evidence of the identity of the person presenting it. So you're presenting the Holy Ghost, and you have to suffer for the rest of your life because you used the wrong identity. If you had used the source document, you'd be free of the matrix. And that is the matrix, the first document, which was the source document. So the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Now, what it says in the Bible is the only way you can get to the Father is through the Son, because he's the only one living. Gee, that silenced everyone.
Yeah.
Is it Vinny?
Yeah, I'm all right. But Clint needed to say something about the definition of the actual matrix in there. You got some Skype notes I think you should read out, man.
Well, the concept of, we actually have to keep asking the same question. What does it mean to be born or birthed into a fiction, right? You can't. There's no life in a fiction. So the word birth from Ballantyne's Legal Dictionary, the third edition, birth means delivery from the womb. Womb means is also another word for matrix. Matrix is defined in the civil law as the protocol, like he was saying, the protocol or first draft of a legal instrument from which all copies must be taken. So that original certificate of birth is from whence all fiction comes, basically. That's the definition of matrix, a womb, a place where anything is generated or formed. Well, the only thing that can be generated or formed in a fiction is something fictional, something artificial, something dead. So if birth means delivery, what does delivery mean? You could say it's delivery, but delivery means, in the same dictionary, a handing over, the surrender of possession to another, a release from imprisonment. So my mother, when she signs the birth certificate, she is signing not as my mother, but as an informant of the state. She is literally
Let me see if you get this straight. Are you calling your mother a quasi-Stasi?
Absolutely. And all mothers out there who have no idea that they're signing a matrix, they're signing their child into a matrix. Literally, the word matrix is being used here as a legal function. So if I'm surrendering my child, I'm yielding possession. Okay, so now I only have my child in title. I just have the certificate. I can use the child. I can take care of the child. And there's some horrible documents or court opinions out there that absolutely state that the marriage is a marriage. Marriage means a contract between the man, the woman, and the state. Period. End of story. And the state is parents patria, parent of the country, parent of the state is the parent. The state allows the parents to raise the children as long as they're good citizens, as long as the state's beneficial interest is in having the parents raise its property. That's the unfortunate truth of the matter. Now, birth William C. Anderson's Dictionary of Law in 1889 is very specific. What is birth? Well, it doesn't tell you. It says, see, abandon. What is abandon? To relinquish, surrender, disclaim, desert, forsake, give up, wholly. So basically, you're absolutely right. It's the Trinity. You're basically allowing the state to become the father. By being the informant, it's hard to explain, but you're informing, like you're informing on like as a witness to a crime. You're literally accusing your child of being something it's not, and you're forming or informing a new human, which is not man, but the form of man. They want us to believe that we are human, which means no God. You know, that the humanities and philanthropy and that sort of thing is strictly the notion that humans can take care of themselves without the notion of the natural without God, basically. Mm. Without the concept of God. So there's this, yeah, he's right, man, there's this whole thing going on, and it's all based on that Trinity concept. I call it mind, body, and soul. Basically the same thing presented as a biblical, you know, thing. So yeah, you're yielding your child or surrendering the possession of your child to the state, basically.
Mm-hmm. And Mark, what does natural law have to say about this? Isn't there like a Trinity in there too with the natural law concepts?
Absolutely there is, Vinny. The Trinity, as seen from a natural law perspective, is the aspects of the manifestation of one's consciousness in the physical world, namely our thoughts, our emotions, and our actions. Or in other words, the Father, the Spirit, and then the child, which is the offspring. Okay, the male child, which is action, is the offspring of our thoughts, the Father, and our Spirit, the Mother. You know, the spirit in which we do something. And when, you know, our thoughts and our care come together, then the byproduct of those things is right action in the world. That's the real Trinity in consciousness. But I'd like to just go back briefly and just touch on something that was said earlier, which I'd like to just respectfully disagree with the definition of the word sovereign that was given as being a ruler over others. If the word sovereign is actually broken down and we look at the real meaning of the roots of the word sovereign, it actually is a negative definition. Okay, so the word sovereign comes from two Latin root words, the adverb super in Latin, which means above, and the Latin regnum, meaning rulership or control. So thus, when we put these two root words together, you have a sovereign, which means one who is above the rulership or control of another. It's not saying that you are ruling over others. A sovereign simply means that you are not ruled by anybody else in the physical domain. Okay, it means you are not a subject or a slave to any other. That's simply what the word means. Again, it's a negative definition. It means not a slave by its very breakdown etymologically. Now, a sovereign is a ruler, however, but it is a ruler of the self. A sovereign, a true sovereign, only rules one individual, and that individual is themselves, the physical incarnate being in the body. They have control over the thoughts, emotions, and actions of exactly one being, themselves. Now, traditionally, historically, yes, people have referred to sovereigns as meaning kings or queens in the world who are rulers over others. But again, I'm distinguishing this from the actual real, that in nature definition of the word compared to how people have historically interpreted it, you know, through human language and over human history. Now, with that being said, to go into you know, what I feel is the solution to all of this regarding our understanding of nature versus fiction, you have to look at it like this. There is no use of words, no intellectual constructs, no intellectual only based understanding that will ever make a psychopath leave you alone in nature. in the natural world. And this is what we're ultimately talking about here. We're talking about the way people relate to other people through their behaviors. And this is the part that I feel is neglected often in the whole straw man, legal fiction, free man on the land movement, whatever you want to name it. Okay. You look at it as a simple example. Would you try or to make an effort to deeply understand all the intellectual aspects of how a con man's con game works? Would you go through the effort to try to really deeply understand how he defrauded you and then try to negotiate somehow with him to reclaim what was wrongfully, fraudulently taken from you? Or would you just make a deep understanding within your being that a con man is simply a criminal who had no right to ever do what he is doing or did, never will have that right, and then treat him as the criminal that he is? You know, what seems the more realistic and natural approach?
Well, see, for me,
intellectual understanding will only get you so far toward true human freedom. Holistic understanding incorporates a deep knowledge of the difference between right and wrong behavior, which is what natural law is. You know, it's the universal, non-man-made, existing in the natural world, inherently binding conditions and unchangeable conditions that govern the consequences of the behavior that we take in the world. And in the aggregate, our behaviors are actually creating whether we are enslaved or whether we are free or not. And only unless people understand that body of universal spiritual laws, which act as the governing dynamics to human consciousness, are we ever going to get out of the situation of enslavement that we've worked ourselves into?
See, I've got a different approach. I mean, I'm not, I've got like a bit of a bad history with police and courts and everything. I just basically figured out a while ago that if you tell the truth to a police officer, he'll use it against you and even lie on top of it in order to mess up your life. And the same idea, I kind of got involved with the courts and justices and even getting experience with associating with gang members and things like that with certain people. And I get the idea, the impression that nothing good can come from the situation. Everything they offer you, they can take you away. Everything they give you, everything they tell you is going to be really nice and easy for you, actually winds up being really hard and you can never escape it. So my body doesn't react like it used to before having those experiences. I get a massive stress response when even thinking about going to a courtroom or approaching a police officer, even if I've done absolutely nothing wrong, even if I'm the one doing the approaching. And because of that, well, I think maybe I'll try to use the worst term possible for it, cowardice and unwillingness to actually take the system head on at points or even really even deal with them when they come to me. I try to overcompensate for that by doing my part to help those people who are willing to do those things that I'm too cowardly to do. Have I compensated enough? I'm not 100% sure that I have, but I'm doing the best with what I got. Because the free man movement really needs a hell of a lot of help, and it needs a hell of a lot of understanding, and it needs a hell of a lot of spreading and whatnot. And somebody needs it to be a stable kind of back block there to help pick you up when you fall, sort of thing. And I don't know if I'm doing the right thing.
I recommend two books specifically, one being the Bible and specifically the 1611, because that's the law. And I recommend that people read The Law by Frederick Bastiat. A French guy wrote it in 1850, a year before he died. The Law, to me, was a life changer. It was a pamphlet. It wasn't a book. It was a political statement that was being handed out at the time. And it really defined what law is supposed to be. That the law is not supposed to have any more power than any other individual out there. The law is just another individual. Unfortunately, it's the force of law. And that generally gets screwed up. So that's what you're seeing is the law being used for something it's not supposed to be used for, which is basically lawful plunder. The problem that people have, in my opinion, is simply when you were there, you were acting as Vinnie Eastwood, a slave to the New Zealand government or whatever. I mean, you literally are acting. You're an actor portraying the part in a fictional tale, and therefore you're bound by the laws of that fictional thing. So if you're acting in the name and you give them your name and you say, I am Vinnie Eastwood, instead of I exist, I am what I am, and I don't need to tell you anything else. Well, if you're acting as the person, then you're taking responsibility for the freedom that is allowed to you. And freedom is not a right. It's a privilege because you're acting as something that is not free. So freedom is, again, granted to you. You can roam around the rat cage all you want as long as you don't try to escape it or break the rules of the rat cage. That's freedom.
Can I say that that's actually kind of the unwritten rule of democracy is you've got freedom of speech. You can say anything you want so long as it doesn't actually change anything.
Sure. Well, that's the most important thing I learned. And again, this is the true awakening process. Most people, when they say they're awake, all they really want to do is blame the stupid people, the unawake, for all the problems. And as Mark is saying, not do any action at all. You want to do anything in law, you have to go to court. So you just want to blame somebody. Well, I hear music.
Yeah, and we're going to blame the network for having breaks and stuff like that. Well, we cut to one and regather our thoughts and whatnot. You're with Vinnie Eastwood on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. My very special guests, Clint Richardson, Mark Passio, and Bill Turner, will return so long as they don't get raided in the interim. We'll be right back. We're back, ladies and gentlemen, on the Vinnie Eastwood Show, Revolution Radio. That's freedomslips.com. Listener-supported show, listener-supported network. That means you kind of got to support it. My very special guests joining me now, still, rather, are Bill Turner, Clint Richardson, and Mark Passio. Now, the other element to this equation is not just the legal arguments, and it's kind of comes down to force. At the end of the day, do you have the force necessary to back up your words, kind of thing? Like if somebody in a bar says, I can beat the crap out of you, and another person says, I can beat the crap out of you, and they stop at only words, you never figure out who wins. Whereas the government doesn't stop at only words, they have men with guns that can be yelled at through a telephone and storm down and destroy your life relatively quickly. And I've seen it happen many, 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 many times, too many times to count, with people who come up against the system. And these are people who aren't arguing even legal fictions or anything. These are people going around their ordinary lives and just have these government scumbags come in and destroy them, you know, for no other reason than they just want to take what you've got. How do we defend ourselves against such an enemy? Can we understand such an enemy?
I think I'll jump in there, Vinny, and say that the first way that you prevent an enemy like that from destroying you is you morally educate the young and get them to understand what rights truly are, that rights exist in nature and rights are actions which do not cause harm to others. You know, this is part of the lack of understanding inside of humanity because we don't understand what natural law is. Again, it's part of the natural inherent world, not part of any kind of a fictional entity, not part of any kind of a construct in the mind, not part of any belief system. Rights are behaviors and behavior exists in the natural realm. This is part of the problem, that people think that behaviors which are rights can be somehow curtailed and somebody can prevent somebody from performing them because of what they say is allowed or not allowed, which is called man's law. And other people think that people have rights because they've been delegated by man's law to do these things that are coercive and violent. People think that they have these rights which do not exist. You know, rights are actions which do not cause harm to other beings, period. That's the definition. It's an apophatic definition, which means a definition given in the negative. Apophysis means you're saying what something is by defining what it is not. A right is an action that does not
cause harm to another. So then what you have to really understand is, what are the actions that cause harm that we should not be engaged in? You know, what are the transgressions against the natural law, against the natural world? Well, there's only a small listing of actions that really are violations against other beings, and therefore violations against moral law. Murder, assault, rape, theft, trespass, and coercion. You don't engage in those behaviors, and you teach your young not to engage in those behaviors. And if they really understood that, they would never join any kind of entity of government, police, military, or otherwise. And therefore, you wouldn't have this kind of oppression going on, because the population would be moral. In natural law, there's a simple correlation that relates freedom and morality. And it's essentially, as morality increases, freedom increases. As morality declines, freedom declines. When you have a population that doesn't understand what rights are and how they exist inherently in nature because of the nature of the behavior that is being performed, okay, and therefore they don't understand what you have a right to actually do in your behavior versus what you have no right to do through your behavior. When you have a population that is that ignorant, you have slavery. And that's all you can ever get as a result of that lack of moral understanding. When you have a population that does understand what rights are, and therefore is a moral population, you have a population that is going to receive, through their behaviors that they are conducting in their lives, ever increasing amounts of freedom, and they're not going to be enslaved. They're not going to be able to be enslaved. Only an immoral population can ever become enslaved. So then you look at the state of the world and you understand it must be a result of the people of the world in the aggregate sense being immoral because they do not understand rights.
Well, it's kind of like you know the Predator movie, how he rips that guy's spine out kind of thing? I think that's what's happened to humanity over the last 100 or so years, or at least in a very quick way in the last 100 or so years relative to the entirety of human history, where our moral backbone has literally been ripped out. Vertebrae by vertebrae, it's been taken from us. And
absolutely.
How long does it take to regrow a spine of sufficient strength to stand up to the weight of what we're up against is my question.
Sadly, I think a heart needs to be regrown first, and a brain needs to be regrown. You know, people lack not only knowledge, but they don't care in the aggregate. I mean, there are some who do. I mean, I don't want to make a blanket statement about that, but, you know, until we as a people, in the aggregate sense, as a species, humanity develops a care about the true difference between right and wrong behavior. And then intellectually and as in a holistic sense, as far as intelligence, true intelligence goes, deeply understands the difference between right and wrong behavior, and then develops the will and courage to stand up against the people who refuse to learn that lesson and therefore are continuing to exhibit psychopathic behaviors, exactly nothing will change on this planet until those qualities are developed within the beings living on it.
And of course, with the psychopathic governments in charge of the education systems and so on and so forth, that's quite a big challenge indeed, not one that can be changed entirely by one person. And I've said for a long time the tactic of the cactus is to protect itself in all directions with prickly spines. So anything that assails it, whether it's coming from either side or up above, winds up getting a little prick to remind it not to, and to leave the cactus alone. And in this way, it doesn't matter which issue you're really talking about, whether it be the free man movement, whether it be radiation contamination or the corruption of the health industry, police brutality, etc., etc. There's always somebody fighting against that. And I'm just wondering, is it possible or is it even logical to attempt to coordinate it? Or is everybody acting as their little spine, their little prick in and of themselves, and protect humanity that way, regardless of organization? Because once you add organization, once you add leaders into it, there is a head to the snake all of a sudden, which can be cut off.
Well, the concept of teaching, I agree absolutely, you know, teach your children well so that their father's hell will pass. What needs to be instilled in people and in our children is the sense of duty. Duty is the real concept, the backbone of a right, because if other people don't feel the duty to protect everyone else's rights in nature, then there's no point in having rights because no one's there to respect them. So this is the concept of negative law. So natural and negative in the parlance of the legal concept of law are the same thing, whereas statutes, you know, public code and all the other types of law that we see and we participate in, contractual law, is what's called positive law. And I, you know, this was one of the most revealing things for me that helped me along in my journey to understand this. So if we're talking about a negative and a positive, we know that the only thing that can cancel out a positive is a negative. So when government comes in, again, mind control comes in and creates positive law, statutes and everything else, the only reason that a government would do that is to cancel out the negative law. So they tell you, hey, you have inalienable rights. Every state constitution starts in the United States, starts with the notion that we have inalienable rights, not unalienable. That would mean that they can't be sold. But inalienable rights means that you have the consensual, voluntary right, even if it's tacit and you've never volunteered in your life, you don't really need to know that you're volunteering, is the point in legal parlance. You have the right to sell your God-given or natural negative state of being. If you want to call that rights, you can. Your duty to everyone else, basically. And you can sell that for positive rights. But then, see, now you have no protection under the negative or natural law. You've given that up. You've turned your back on God, if you will, and you've accepted a membership in a club, basically. Now, the important part of this that really helped me to understand is to picture magnets. Now, this is not a physics lesson because it's incorrect physics. I'm just asking you to picture two magnets. When you try to put those magnets together, they repel each other. Everybody's experienced this. And that's how you can consider negative and positive law. Again, not in physics, but in just as a parable here. So if you try to push negative law and positive law together, they're automatically going to repel, because the positive law is always designed to negate the negative law, to bring you into a positive state of being. What does negative mean? Negative simply means that you have the right not to be forced to do anything. Okay, and that's not all, though. It is your duty under the negative law to never force anything on anyone else. It's very simple when you put it that way. As far as positive law, this is where the word right or the word duty becomes legal or positive right. What is a right in the fiction? Well, we know a right can't exist in a fiction. It's called a right. It's by name only, as everything is in the fiction. So in positive law, you have the right to have things forced upon you. And that is the most important thing you need to know as a citizen. As a citizen, as a member, as an employee of the United States — employ just means use for your labor — you have the right under positive law to have anything at all forced upon you. That is your voluntary agreement as a contractual citizen of the United States. That is the nature of the contractual relationship. I recommend everybody go to U.S. Code Title 42, Section 1981, 42, 1981, and sit back and read that about 10 times, because it literally says it's your right in this country as a citizen to be extorted, punished, put in pain, taxed, and everything else. Exaction, which means... Go ahead.
No. Finish your sentence. I just have something to add.
Well, exaction and extortion are basically the same thing. One is defined as the other. Exaction is like when a police comes and gives you a ticket. He's exacting money that does not belong to him, whereas government taxes you in the form of, say, property tax, which is an extortion, a rent, basically, on property.
Well, this reminds me of a conversation I had with a former prosecuting sergeant, Grace Hayden, for the New Zealand Police. 15 years she was spending the job. And she said, you actually only have three rights. Put up, shut up, or pay up.
You know? Right. I mean, in as a person, your rights are defined for you. They are not actual, as Mark alluded to them, negative rights and duties. They are positive rights and duties. So they're the absolute opposite. One, you know, natural means you can't be forced. Positive or statute means you must be forced.
Billy, did you have something to add? Go for your life, sir.
Vinny, what she says is totally wrong, but that's what the police are led to believe. Now, if you go onto their website, you will see that the police commissioner says that they police by consent. But at the lower level, they use force all the time. And like you said earlier, whatever you say will be used against you. It's only what you say that can be used against you. Because if you say nothing, then they're helpless. There's nothing they can do. But at the lower levels, all they do is that put up, shut up, or pay up, which is absolute rubbish because the judge will decide that. But the courts that the police are prosecuting in are the summary courts where they have justices of the peace. And the justices of the peace are just members of the public who don't know a thing about law, and they will bulldoze you through. You do not have any rights in their courts. They're just getting a summary proceeding, and summary means to rush you to justice without any rights whatsoever.
It's ironic that the summary court will give you a rather wintry reception. I'm terrible with the jokes today. In fact, I'm just having a bad day. In fact, there's a lot of people.
We're laughing, but the mics are muted.
Oh, okay. All right. That makes me feel a whole lot better.
Honest.
I'd like to sort of move on just a little bit, Vinny, to raise it to a slightly higher level, because what's happening now is we are in the age of revelation and everything's being revealed. The stuff that I've learned over the last 10 years is just unbelievable. We had no access to this stuff before, but now all of a sudden we're getting access to it through the internet, which is great. Now, one of the things I found, like I know the Americans have got a Declaration of Independence, but we also had one, and Clendon, the American guy, came down here and helped them write it. Now, when I sat down and actually had a look at our 1835 Declaration of Independence, I realized it was a will, the will of the people. They said, we, the sovereign chiefs, blah, 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 blah. What they were saying was, it is our will to do this. So having a look at the names on the document, I realized that all the chiefs were dead. So I posed the question, has this will been probated? And so in a trip to the Murray Land Court, we found out that the will had not been probated. So What we need to do first is to free ourselves. You see, at the moment, because we have wrongly identified ourselves as the person and not as the living, we identified ourselves as the Holy Ghost and not the source document. So we have to rekindle our status as the living so that we're no longer an abstract noun and we can be seen and heard. At that stage, we will probate the will, and this will bring in the new covenant, or the age of Aquarius.
Do you believe in that kind of age shifting things like that, Mark?
When you get to my age, you know what age is, Vinny.
I'm about to turn 30. Trust me, I'm starting to get a picture.
Vinny, I would say that I do have an appreciation for the concept of cycles, meaning opportunities that are kind of present themselves as lessons for us to either incorporate, learn, and grow from, or to ignore, and therefore kind of like repeat the class, so to speak. I don't think the same thing occurs. I would say it's like that old adage, you know, history repeats itself if we ignore the lessons that it has to teach us. A lot of people leave that part out of it. I look at cycles and time periods as learning opportunities. And if we get them, then maybe we can go up, you know, like up the spiral, so to speak. And if we don't get them, then, you know, we may get taken down a notch, or we have to learn through chaos and pain. And I think that's the kind of time period that humanity is entering into right now. I think we've kind of rejected knowledge. We've rejected a deep understanding of natural law principles. We've rejected concept of wisdom through right action in the world. And as a result, we've gone into deep bondage. And I think, only more suffering is going to be heaped upon humanity as a result of that lack of knowledge. And I think the only way out of that is for people to take their minds out of the entire artificial world, to take their mind out of the realm of illusion, to really deeply understand that the only thing that is ultimately creating reality is the behaviors that people enact. And that's what free will is all about. The creator of the universe gifted us with free will. As free beings, we have the right to decide which actions we will perform or not perform, regardless of whatever amount of manipulation or mind control techniques or methods of, social conditioning are thrown at us. Ultimately, free will comes down to an individual choice of whether or not you're going to take a specific behavior that either causes harm to another being or does not. And everybody has not only the right and the duty, but they actually possess the free will choice to either take that behavior or not. It all ultimately comes down to that choice. Most people want to try to abdicate the responsibility for that choice to someone else. And that is also a fiction. That is also something that cannot actually be done in nature. Ultimately, we are always responsible for the behaviors that we choose, and we can never abdicate that responsibility to anyone else.
I was kind of thinking about this in terms of, in those beautiful swanky party ballrooms that you kind of see in the movies or what have you, they got that giant pyramid stack of champagne glasses, and they pour these giant bottles of champagne, and it kind of overflows one glass and then fills up the next and the next all the way down the chain. Is that sort of how this resistance is working? Like in terms of global resistance, I'm not isolating it to the free man, sovereign, straw man movements. In fact, can we come up with a new pseudonym, something that actually describes it without having to describe all three, because it's taking effing ever. But is that how it's actually working? And just eventually, once the champagne from the top, from everybody who's had to stay up there so long, fighting so hard, without a terribly large amount of recognition or reward, will it eventually filter down to the bottom and send the whole pyramid itself come tumbling down?
Well, I'll try, Vinny, because I believe that everyone has a piece of the jigsaw puzzle, and it's only by sharing our pieces and everyone stepping up to the table and putting their piece on the table that the knowledge will raise the frequency of all those out there in radio land to a high enough vibration that it will become common knowledge, like the 100 monkey syndrome.
I very much agree with that sentiment. The way I look at it, Vinny, is instead of like a pyramid structure where it's trickling down from the top, if you're familiar at all with BitTorrent or distributed networking, distributed file sharing, I think it kind of works like that. As Bill was saying, we all have pieces to bring to the table, and we bring a little bit of that, and then we share it all. And then eventually we all, have the total file, so to speak, in the BitTorrent analogy, if you're familiar with how it works. It's really how this knowledge sharing is going to work throughout the world. And that's why it's so important for people that have any part of information to share, of important information to share with others, to step forward and bring that information to the table. And only when we're all doing that great work of sharing the truth and sharing the information that we have come to know, are we going to change the aggregate body of humanity for the better?
See, I'm not 100% sure whether or not I'm like so full of truth and facts and everything for people to listen to, but I try to compensate.
You're
for
too
that.
Modest.
Yeah. Well, I just want to give amplification to voices who know things that I don't, so that other people can benefit for their knowledge as well as I.
What are you talking about? I learned what douchebaggery is from you.
Scumbaggery. You haven't learned a thing.
Scumbaggery. But douchebaggery too. In America, we call them douches. I want to say, I actually have to duck out, and I apologize. This was kind of a last-minute thing. But I agree wholeheartedly that we are in this sense of revelation, okay? Meaning that we are in the midst of a massive disclosure of basically all of our collective enslavement. Now, the problem is we have disclosure without consequence. Right now, everything is being disclosed that is not just from people like Vinnie Eastwood and all these guys, but also from the mainstream media. I mean, you have the alternative and mainstream media completely disclosing everything, the worst possible crimes from pedophilia to you know, everything, that the Pope is the Antichrist. Everything is being disclosed. The problem is, as we've been talking, is that we are not proverbing. We are not doing anything about it. And yes, and that's the thing that needs to change. So what needs to be very, very clear to people is that what we don't want, and this is going to sound strange, is we don't want a revolution. Because what is the definition of revolution?
To go in a circle.
Cycle. It means to go right back to where we started from. So if you look at things like the Titler cycle, where it go, you know, each civilization and each cycle goes through these different, you know, from bondage to spiritual awakening and then to dependence and then back to bondage. And it just recycles. It just revolves in this continuing cycle. That's what we don't want to happen. In this day and age, we have the capability of actually creating something that'll never let that happen again. So we can actually move forward. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily progress, because nowadays it seems like progress is just basically promoting itself. Progress for absolutely no reason. Hey, let's test the limits of nature and see what we can mutate and GMO and everything else. So, you know, progress has to be limited to morals and values as well. Like I said, I have to go. I did want to promote Mark. I'm sure it was going to go anyway. Mark and Bob Tuscan and myself and many others are going to be speaking at the Free Your Mind conference in Philadelphia in April. And that's Free Your Mind. What is it? FreeYourMindConference.com, I think
that's
it is.
That's correct.
Yes. Hey, there you go. And I look forward to having all you guys on my show as well. My show's on Republic Broadcasting, and as well as Mark's. Mine's Monday through Friday from, 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific. And then I also just wanted to say, it's ironic that you asked me this. I'm hoping to have out in April before that conference. I decided to write a book finally. I've spent 10 years doing this, everything for free and giving everything away. And I decided to write a nonprofit public domain book that'll be available for trade or barter. Not going to be in my name. It's not going to be published. It's not going to be any of that. It's not going to have any numbers or barcodes or anything. It's going to be, you can copy it, whatever. And that's going to be out in April. It's actually called, ironically, it's called Straw Man, The Real Story of Your Artificial Person. So I'm hoping to have that out. And it's going to be like an indexed sort of guidebook through all these words that we're talking about and explaining the difference between, of course, the fiction and reality or nature. So I appreciate it, Vinny. Keep doing what you're doing. And thank you, gentlemen, for doing what you're doing, and I'll catch you guys later.
Clint, I want to say thanks for taking part in the panel discussion. It was a pleasure to be on it with you, and I'll see you in person at the Free Your Mind 3 conference in April.
I look forward to that. I love meeting people that are not just digital friends anymore. It's so great. Yeah. All right, guys, take care.
All right. When you seal that digital friendship with a real hug, there's something magical there. Ah, oh yeah. But anyway, speaking on more serious issues, I wanted to spend the last half hour that we've got here speaking about trauma and actually how it affects people, because I was just thinking about post-traumatic stress disorder or whatever the heck, a made-up condition you want to think. Some people get their, let's just say, their fuse gets shortened. A lot of people that have a fuse, like, it takes an hour to kind of wear you down with abuse and questioning your motives and accusing you of stuff and whatever before you flip your lid. Other times it starts to become instant. And I'm not 100% sure exactly what the cause of this is, but my theory is that you will get traumatized by psycho scumbags if you try to resist them directly. And as a result of resisting directly psycho scumbags, you kind of start to turn into one of them to a degree if you're not careful. Have you guys noticed this?
Absolutely, Vinny. They're practiced in the art, and they know that once they break you down, you can't shut up. But they will try every trick in the book, including walking out and leaving you locked up, coming back. A different one will come in. They use all sorts of stuff to wear you down. But that little room, that processing room that they put you in, is cold. It's not very inviting.
Yeah, well I think the point here is that what was it Dante's Inferno said? He said, when you look into hell, sometimes hell stares back at you. And I think there kind of needs to be rest and recovery periods in between your activism, because I don't know. It's like, can you do permanent damage to somebody's personality by if you're working yourself to the bone kind of thing, can you do actual permanent damage to your ability to deal with regular social situations because you've literally hurt your brain with sleep deprivation, with stress, with trauma in the process?
Sure. You could definitely burn yourself out. I mean, I've felt like that from time to time because of how hard I've pressed. And I know, with how, much work that you've put into this whole movement and, the schedule that you operate on, it's got to be very difficult. The people who are doing the, quote, great work really have – we have hardly anyone to tag out to, if you know what I mean. You know, we're in this fight for the long haul, and our will and our care is not going to allow us to stay out of it for very long. But it is important to take – respites, to take periods of, using some time periods to reinstitute some balance in our lives, because this is an extreme thing. When the world falls into a state of darkness and decay and moral dissolution, the people who are doing this great work, the brunt of it is all upon their shoulders. And it's a very small group of people at the current time in history who are sharing information like this and who know it deeply. And so, you do have to eventually take time for yourself. You can't, go over too much toward the other side of imbalance and then turn, fall asleep again and kind of like, not worry about what's going on in the world. But I think for the people who really understand what is taking place here, they won't do that, and they'll try to strike that balance somehow. To go back to your concept of, when you're dealing with psychopathic people and people who are conducting violence, and at some point, if you were, to engage that, you have to be very careful that you do not become one of them as well. The goal here is not to become so left brain imbalanced that you could just conquer the other lesser left brain imbalanced people, or the ones who, engage you to begin with. The real solution would, of course, be healing that brain imbalance, so you don't have a bunch of, people with psychopathic tendencies from left brain imbalance. But I would say, once we're in this situation, yes, is it true that a revolution would be like a failure? I've said that from day one. I don't want to see it come to anything like that, because I'm not looking for war. I want peace to reign over the earth. I want people to essentially respect human rights, to understand what rights are, and to leave other people alone and just not start trouble, not coerce them, not start violence with them, But for people who a whole society that has basically built up a false belief system in the fictional domain that is so out of touch with the actual laws of nature and the real natural world. They're such in that psychopathic mind state, a lot of these dominators, that they're not going to listen to reason. They're not going to understand anything but what they're told. They want what's happening. They love it. They can't get enough of it. They're sick people. They're brain damaged people. They're mentally ill. I'm not using those as metaphors. I'm saying literally they're sick, mentally ill, brain damaged individuals that don't care about what's right or wrong and are going to listen to whatever their orders come down and then just act without thinking because they hate themselves. See, you can't act like that unless you have total self-loathing at work in your being. You have to be a self-hater to be an order follower. Nobody who is truly a self-loving being and has developed a deep self-respect within themselves could continue to be a follower of someone else's orders. That's the definition of not exercising conscience, of not actively choosing willfully the difference between right and wrong behavior for yourself. So all of these order followers, okay, they think they can abdicate their personal responsibility to choose between right and wrong, but that it can't be done in nature, as I've already said. Where that comes from, that desire to abdicate that responsibility, is from earlier traumatic experiences. Okay, it's they're wrestling with abandonment issues, they're wrestling with self-loathing issues, they're wrestling with lack of self-respect, unresolved trauma, feelings of inadequacy, feelings of unworthiness.
That sounds exactly like the attributes of a person that a psychopath looks to feed on.
That's right. And they look to do their bidding to people like that. And unfortunately, for a paycheck or for some petty sense of illusory power, most of these secondary psychopaths are all too willing to give their body, their mind, their energy, and their free will over to the psychopaths that are basically running the world. And not only that, enslaving them and their family, even whether the order followers know it or not, and to continue to do their bidding, even though these people have basically made it known that they hate these people more than anybody else, call them their animals, call them their dogs, okay, treat them as such. And, you know, they're willing to do that just for the pittance that they're thrown in their little slop trough, you know, that, you know, given their house and their mobile car, you know, their ability to make a little bit of cash and, you know, a title and a uniform and, again, an illusory sense of power over others. And for that little pittance that they're thrown, they're willing to enslave not only themselves but future generations. Until we engage those individuals, and I don't mean physically engaging them, but you know, if it has to come to that, you know, it'll have to come to that. We need to be engaging them in the realm of face-to-face encounters in their personal lives, not even in their role as an order follower and a, you know, quote, law enforcer. We need to engage them in their personal lives as individuals. And where I'm going to start moving into my material talking about this deeply is the role that women can actually play in that social interaction, because women are not stepping into the role as the people who can truly and deeply instill a sense of moral qualities and moral fiber throughout society. They've largely stepped out of that, sadly, very unfortunately. And many of them think that, you know, it's a good thing that they stepped out of that, when in fact it was highly destructive to the entire people of the earth when women took on a different role as opposed to that traditional role as the nurturers and the ones who brought in a sense of morality into the young. More so than anyone else, they have the ability to step up to these, quote, dominators and these order followers and really get up in their face and really challenge their worldview if they wake themselves up out of illusion, you know. And when they do that on a one-to-one individual basis, I think we're going to see some progress in some of these order followers starting to develop a modicum of a conscience. And but it's going to be women's role in that process is so incredibly important. And again, that's why I think I want to, you know, go back to some of the work that I did on the non-supportive dominators and the non-supportive order followers and really deeply emphasize the aspect of the power that women can have in that transformative process.
Mark Passio, ladies and gentlemen, releasing his own brand of cornflakes soon enough, full of moral fiber. And I wanted to go back to what Clint said as he left us, you know, keep up the good work, Vinny. And I was like, and then you mentioned, Mark, is about the moral fiber that we have. It doesn't actually allow us to not keep up the good work kind of thing. But we understand our physical limitations that we can't continuously work. I mean, like, for example, anybody who criticizes a person for doing what we do and then just taking time off or something to recuperate. Do you sleep at the night time, you know? I mean, you've got physical needs, don't you? Do you take a day off here or there, or get away from the kids for a night to go drink some malt liquor? You know,
contrary to popular belief, Vinny, I am human.
If you say so. And I was thinking about you also mentioned there about how these people who are enforcing it, and I think Bill's had a bit of experience in this thing about these people who are sort of mentally ill and sort of morally bankrupt, right? And this can actually be accomplished with very simple mind control techniques like sleep deprivation, repetition, and a silo mentality that ostracizes outsiders who say anything different. And that's the staple diet of law students and medical students and a lot of other forms of things, your political office and whatnot in important positions. Those are the things that actually happen to you. And it works to shut down your higher brain functions and turn you into a mindless drone who just comes into this bureaucratic mindset where it's not about creativity. It's not about exceptions to the rules. It's not about bending things to suit individuals and make things purposeful and meaningful on an individual basis. It's about applying a set of standards regardless. Yeah. And it seems to me that this also winds up creating counter to it, well, at least it's supposed to be counter to it, are people of who don't think there are any rules at all. You know, like another false choice, like the perception versus reality crowd. Now, I asked a question before on Facebook a few weeks ago. If perception was reality, does that mean what you allow magically disappears also? Mm-hmm. Doesn't, does it?
Vinny, you're absolutely 100% correct with what they do to the lawyers, the doctors, etc. Once you get on that treadmill, you just do not ever have time to think. And there's also the other evil part that comes in too, and that's the money. So how I actually got on this road was by actually turning my back against all those, and I haven't worked since 2005. Well, not in a full-time role. I've devoted my life to studying this, to find out, to crack the code. And the moment of, well, what I did back in 2005 is I said, I want to be provided for. So I put it out to the universe to be provided for. And it's amazing, the moment you come off that treadmill, your brain opens up. And watching the latest remake of Total Recall, they absolutely know what's going to happen. They say, quick, you've got to bring them in. The computer program's deleting. We've got to reprogram them.
I think that's another thing is to be aware of false choices, you know. Hey, bro, do you want me to knock you real hard with my left hand or my right hand? Well, I'm still going to get knocked real hard, bro. And there's a lot of false choices out there. And like, I don't know. It's almost as if we need to be able to decipher things for ourselves, because nobody's actually ever going to tell you like the whole truth. And even if they were, you wouldn't actually be able to verify it with three sources who didn't know each other, who looked at it objectively and verified it, you know, in the journalistic sense of the word. So a lot of the time, we're actually just operating on belief. I believe that person is correct. I believe that person is moral and just. What if they're not? How would you know if you didn't investigate, if you didn't question, right? And the same thing is absolutely true of some people in our movement. And it seems to be the proclivity towards infighting gets really, really big when you actually directly respond and feed the beast. And what it does to the audience is it actually muddies the waters. If you see two people who are having the conflict of ideas, because you've gotten into the point of just believing what people say without verifying it for yourself in a journalistic way, and I'm speaking from experience here because this used to happen to me, you don't actually know who's telling the truth, and as a result, you switch off completely and don't want to listen to either side anymore, even if they are the one telling you the truth. It's something you've got to be really, really careful of. And I think it really does come down to one thing, though. What are you actually prepared to take action on, right? If you're not prepared to take action on something, in my opinion, the importance of you knowing it absolutely implicitly is slightly less than if you are actually willing to put your life, your money, and your family, and your future on the line in order to devote yourself to it.
And Vinny, you know, this is all about, as I've said, taking this into the realm of action. When people get trapped in intellectual debate, and like you said, the people that come in and try to drive wedges between, you know, because of different, you know, aspects or constructs that people put forward and, you know, divide people, that's an actual disruption tactic by the people who are paid by the control system or have a vested interest in wanting to see this control system perpetuated for whatever their reasons may be. You know, ultimately what you need is to share common ground. And that's why I feel that my work in natural law is so important. If you understand what the laws of morality are, they need to simply be the common ground. And that's what conscience is. Conscience, it comes from Latin roots. Con in Latin means together or with. And then the word science comes from the Latin scio, the verb scio, sciere in Latin, which means to know or to understand. Well, you put those roots together and you have to know together, to understand together, a framework of common knowledge, common sense. That's what conscience is. That needs to be the common framework, the common foundational ground upon which we stand, the firm footing upon which we all stand together and understand that together. You know, that level of common sense is the difference between the knowledge of the difference between right and wrong behaviors. If we all get on that same page and then enact that within our lives, you know, actually take action, right action upon those principles, there is no force that could ever possibly enslave us if we are acting within those rights.
I've always wanted to see somebody who actually knows how to get out of a ticket or something like that. See somebody pulled up on the side of the road and actually stop your car behind the cop car and then walk up and start policing the police officer and then ask the person in the car, do you want me to advocate for you and get you out of this ticket? That would be really irritating, especially for the traffic cops in New Zealand. If you fail the normal police exam, you can still become a traffic cop, even though you're a failed police officer, except you don't have the ability to arrest anybody for a crime. It's kind of like being a glorified security guard of the road, and you have the flashy lights. And incidentally, in order to make them more intimidating in New Zealand, they said, no, the blue uniforms for real cops. The fake cops, we want to give them black uniforms. You can't make this stuff up, bro.
Part of their new cult training, you know, like you alluded to earlier, Vinny, it's the whole training for these dominators in society is practically identical to the techniques that cults have used throughout history. You know, isolate them from the rest of the community, make them all look and, you know, talk the same. Keep repeating and repeating and repeating the same things to them to indoctrinate and brainwash them, and then put them through, you know, physical abuse that traumatizes them, you know, lack of sleep, you know, put them on a horrible diet with low nutrients, you know. It totally affects the brain. It puts them through mental and emotional trauma. And, sooner or later, then, you know, they're acting as basically robots who can't think for themselves anymore. Same techniques have been used throughout history on any cult. And in any cult, and, you know, people have a hard time seeing how the dominators and controllers of our society are cult members.
Well, that's, you know, they're can I interject here? Because the CIA figured out that mind control is addictive. That's half the reason why people don't want to learn about mind control, because they're freaking addicted to it.
Absolutely.
We crave subjugation in a very real sense, don't we? We actually want somebody to be there to save us. Even though we intellectually know that it's the wrong thing to do, it's always nice to feel like being part of the in crowd. It's something that's kind of natural in our history, isn't it, Mark? Like,
It's propagated through a lot of people, even in the so-called freedom movement, who want to say that, you know, oh, certain groups are going to come in and rescue us. You know, there's people trying to take down, you know, the Fed. There's people trying to take down the international bankers, people trying to take down, you know, the Vatican, et cetera. And it's like this is the hopium religion, the religion of somebody else has it in hand. You know, they're going to take care of it for us. We don't need to take any action. I don't need to really learn anything new or different or change my worldview or my belief system. You know, it's in someone else's hands. It's such a very dangerous, proposition to accept. And I think people who talk like that should be viewed with a tremendous amount of skepticism or put out information that, you know, this group or that group, it's in their hands and they have it. And we need to sit back and just watch or wait and, you know, see what happens. It's a very, very dangerous proposition. You know, when you don't take personal responsibility into your own hands to change things for the better, especially when total injustice is taking place all around us to other people, we're essentially through our complicity and through our silence, exercising in complicity with those immoral behaviors that are being conducted, often in our name, in the name of the people of a particular country or community. And again, only when people rise up in mass and say no and decide we are not going to participate in that control game, in that system, would I say that there's really a mass awakening taking place. People ask me a lot, you know, what would it take for you to say humanity is truly waking up? And I say, so many people quitting their jobs as controllers, as people who work for government, police, military, etc., the mainstream media, quote unquote mainstream media, would actually have to start commenting on it and saying we can't find people to go into these institutions anymore. They're falling apart completely because no one wants to take part in them. When that happens, I'll make the statement publicly, the world is waking up, but not until that happens.
Yeah.
I don't quite agree with you, although that has been true in the past. When I started on this journey, I could talk to maybe five people, and now more and more people, you know, I see it happening daily. You'd see it too, Vinny, by the number of people that click onto your YouTube or onto your site. It's growing and growing and growing. And what we're actually talking about is a 2% consciousness shift to overcome the evil that you're talking about. Their mind control techniques and that will, once we wake enough people up, just overthrows it automatically. We don't have to do a great deal.
Yeah, it's kind of like what they call a critical mass, but I've said ironically, in order to reach critical mass, you need to be able to teach the masses to think critically, and that's quite a challenge indeed. Well, we're coming very close to the end of the broadcast. I don't know exactly when it's going to happen. It could be like 5-10 minutes from now. There's always been some kind of weird thing going on with the network thing because of my theme songs or something. I don't know what it is, but we're gonna meander, and it's going to be fun. I have a couple of notes to say on your gentleman's points. The first one was about zebras. All right. Now, they've found, and this was quoted on a good film called I Am Fishhead about psychopaths, that if a herd of zebras is getting wise to a lion, it actually only takes about 6% of the zebras in the herd to be aware that there's a lion before the entire herd is instantly aware. This is what we call the 100th monkey syndrome, and I think these are these very important points. However, I also noticed that back throughout history, these quote-unquote revolutions, which of course haven't worked in the long term because we all get lapsed back into licentiousness or whatever, it never takes like more than 5% of people to actively be involved in a revolution in order for one to happen. And this revolution that we're talking about here is kind of like a quarantine revolution. let me define that. Quarantine your television. It's not to be watched anymore. Quarantine your taxes. They're not to be paid anymore. Quarantine the big, nasty, ridiculous agrochemical companies like Monsanto that are genetically modifying and destroying everything. You know? This is about it. There's so many millions of different ways that you can resist this entire agenda just by quarantining certain elements of this viral attack on humanity. All right. Now, if anybody's
non-compliance, non-compliance is what it all comes down to.
Non-participation.
No.
You know, you
saying no to evil.
You can't be a spectator in this. I mean, here's a simple question to ask yourself. You know, on a day-to-day basis, how many hours today have I spent consuming, watching, and being entertained by other people's content or other people's creations in some way? It doesn't matter whether it's a piece of technology or a film or a video game or whatever. How many hours are you spent consuming other people's creations versus creating something? Okay?
Yep.
You'll know you have passed the Rubicon when you spend more hours per day creating your own things that contribute to the global expansion of consciousness, human knowledge, discovery, and invention. Okay? You'll know you've passed that Rubicon when you're spending more hours a day creating than consuming, because we're not meant to be consumers. We're not here to just eat and drink and slurp everything dry. We're here to create. We're here to contribute. We're here to manifest things into reality and to talk about things that really matter. Because if you're not talking about things that matter all the time, you're getting to the point where you don't even care about things that matter anymore. You wear a mask for so long that you don't care and you're apathetic and what have you, that you forget who you are when you put that mask on. All right? It's the same reason why you have to quit your job. You can't keep putting that mask on every day and say, yes, I'm okay with doing this and not contributing more or less to humanity in a more fruitful and terrible fashion. Everything changes when you take that leap. Everything that you thought wasn't possible, everybody who tells you, no, you're not going to get enough money, you're not going to have this, you're not going to have that, you'll be surprised. They're absolutely right. Whatever it is that needs to support you, whether it's donations or food or whatever, isn't there. But when you have the decision to quit your job and go and do what you want to do, it turns up only exactly when you need it. It doesn't prepare you for it. It doesn't give you notice when you are exactly at that point where you're screwed and you think about giving up. That's when something will happen to encourage you along. If you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, if you're here being who you really are and not somebody else's plaything. And here's a quote from the Avengers. There's no throne. There's no version of this where you come out on top. Maybe your army comes and maybe it's too much of us, maybe it's too much for us, but it's all on you. Because if we can't protect the Earth, you can be damn well sure we'll avenge it.
Absolutely beautiful. I mean, and you hit the nail right on the head. This is about each individual making the decision to do that great work for themselves and putting that knowledge back out there for other people to take in. It's not about just accumulating and consuming more and more. It's about once you have an accurate understanding, helping someone else to get to that understanding as well. You know, and through that process, we pull each other up. You know, that's what the great work is. That's the essence of it. It's about sharing and it's about getting involved on that spiritual plane, on that spiritual battlefield, if you will, and doing that work for yourself. And you do that by creating content. You do that by putting information out there for other people. You do that by directly engaging other people about what's really important. So I'd say absolutely beautifully said, Vinny. Couldn't have put it any better myself. I wholeheartedly concur.
Yep, I have to agree there, Vinny. That was brilliant. And the more people that actually step up, you see, some of us are better at researching. Some, like yourself, are better at talking. Everyone's got a special talent. And it's when everyone starts to share those talents with the world, then we'll crack it.
Well, the trick is to never lose hope, never lose faith. And but again, I'll reiterate, you don't really have a choice, okay? You have a lack of options. Right. It's unfair, I know, but life is unfair, okay? Anybody who tells you differently is selling something. Probably something not very satisfying. I was just sick of people trying to say that you can solve the world's problems and you don't have to feel pain, you don't have to be depressed, you don't have to... Dude, actually, I say the opposite. You have to feel pain, you have to feel depressed, and that's how you realize that you're still alive. Do you stroke yourself in a dream, or do you pinch yourself? Because it's pain that makes you realize that you're not dreaming.
And to awaken. Yeah, that's right. You know, if anybody is trying to sell people on the idea that doing the great work is somehow going to make you more happy and more peaceful, you know, I think that's a pipe dream as well. I agree with you, Vinny. You know, this is about becoming uncomfortable. This is about creating discord within the existing immoral system. You know, it's about breaking things down. The truth is a destructive process. It breaks down that which is the illusion to make more room for growth of what's real. And taking part in that process can often be a painful thing. It can often wear you out. And again, we talked about having take time, you know, for yourself in many ways to rejuvenate and, you know, redevelop that willpower to go back onto the battlefield again. You know, what we ultimately need is more people stepping up and more people doing that work. As the old saying goes, many hands make for light work. And maybe some of that pressure could be relieved. It would still be work, but if we engage in it together, you know, the stress and pressure on each individual could be, that burden could be lessened a little bit.
Well, I think that's it, really, in a nutshell. I'd like to thank you guys for coming on with me. It's a shame we couldn't have... I wanted so many people to be on this panel discussion, but it was so awesome that I think it'll do, you know? Isn't it good enough?
Vinny, the topic is great.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting us on. It's great to get the message out there to those who are up and coming and following in our footsteps.
Vinny, thanks so much for inviting me to participate. The topic was great. The discussion with the other gentlemen was great. Always illuminating. Your contributions to the discussion were brilliant. And, you know, we have to do this again sometime.
Yeah. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening in. This is, I remind you, a listener-supported broadcast, and I know that it's holiday season and everything, and you've got your family to worry about and the presents to buy and the trips to take and the ecstasy too. And there is a serious, serious need for donations in my household in particular at the moment. We desperately need a new vehicle. If there's anybody out there who is willing to go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and contribute or even sign up for a monthly donation so we don't have to keep begging for them quite so often. It'd be really, really lovely. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again sometime at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.